It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us today. Do be careful out there if you're going to venture forth in whatever weather happens where you are. Coming up, I will be talking with and we will be hearing live in our studio pianist Michael Hammer, based in Champaign-Urbana. He's giving a recital featuring music by Louis Morrow Gottschalk on Sunday afternoon in Champaign. But first on the program, we will be hearing from a group called Vishten, who are a trio out of Eastern Canada. They're going to be playing in at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tomorrow night. And I'll be talking with one of two twin sisters who are in the group. And here's a sample of their wares. We just heard a tune called Toby LaPierre, performed by the Canadian group known as Vishten. They are going to be performing as a joint presentation of the Piper's Hut Concert Series and the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. They are a trio, two of whose members are twin sisters, actually, and the third one, is not. And I have on the phone with me one of those sisters. Her name is Emmanuelle LeBlanc. Her sister is Pastel, and their trio partner, Pascal Mius. And Emma, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and it's been a pleasure to explore your music a little bit. I guess the most obvious first question before we talk a little bit about what the group is what does the name come from, Vishten, V-I-S-H-T-E-N?
Yeah, Vishten is the name of a song, and I'm from Prince Edward Island, from a small community, French community called La Réjean-Majorin, and a famous singer from the area called Angèle Orsenneau. Well, she was famous in Francophone Canada. And she picked up all of these little phrases that were collected in the archives in the 1960s. And they were kind of gibberish. They're a mix of probably Native American, French, and English. And she put all of these little phrases together and formed a song, which she called Vishten. And the song has spread out in various parts of Canada. It was taught to us in school, and we've even heard a choir in Seattle singing it in 4 or 5 part harmony. So for us, it really means the mix of cultures, which is pretty evident in Eastern Canada and Prince Edward Island mostly. So that's what that means.
So the mix of cultures that pertains to your music, of course, has to do especially with the Acadians. So the Acadian people having to do with French folks who had come to the far eastern portions of Canada. You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, they first came. They first started settling in 1604, and they worked the lands, and they really made their life there. Started off in Nova Scotia and spread out to New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island. There are Acadians in the Magdalen Islands, in Newfoundland, in Quebec. So, but from 1755 to 58, the Acadians got deported because they were forced out of their lands. So a lot of them were sent back to France. But they weren't really accepted there because they weren't considered French anymore, so some of them chose to go to Louisiana. So that's where the link comes from, the Acadians and the Cajuns in the South. So
the Acadians and the Cajuns. You said the Acadians and the Cajuns.
Yes, So Cajun comes from the word Acadian.
Mm-hmm.
And so the families that we have, the reasons that we are still there, Pascal and I are LeBlanc, one of the most prominent French, Acadian names. Our families would have been allowed to stay or would have hidden in the woods, and that's why there are still Acadians in the area. Pascal is from the Magdalen Islands, and the Magdalen Islands were never deported, but a lot of Acadian families went up to the Magdalen Islands to kind of escape what was happening. So, yeah, so Acadians it's not a defined area on the map, but there are still Acadians in many areas of eastern Canada, and the culture is still very lively in all of those regions, mostly with the music and songs and food, and we're known for our liveliness.
Pertinent to, of course, what you guys are doing is the musical side of things. Your group does a lot of traditional Acadian music, but also other types of... Would that be considered a type of Celtic music, or do you fuse it with various types of Celtic music?
Well, it is considered a type of Celtic music just because it has been... I mean, like, for example, on Prince Edward Island, the natives were there first, and then the Acadians came, and when they got deported, there were a number of different Irish and Scottish people that started settling on the island. So those tunes would have started permeating the culture, the Acadian culture. And we're playing sometimes an Irish or a Scottish tune, but we'll just play it in the style that's defined more as an Acadian style. So we tap our feet, which is called foot au rythme, or foot percussion, which drives the music and gives it a certain swing. There's a certain type of bowing style that accompanies the tune. And differences in the songs that come from different areas of France where the Acadians originally came from, like Normandy and Brittany. So you do have some Celtic influence coming in from there as well. But at a typical, let's say, like Acadian community, like we grew up in communities where there were dances, there were house parties, people learned music by ear from family members or from people from the community. So it is a passing tradition, and it's something, and there were always tunes, there were always Celtic inspired tunes that would accompany the song.
And you and your sister learned from family members. You're, what, second generation traditional musicians?
Yeah. My dad plays the flute and plays the piano. And my mom, she's a step dancer, and she used to play a bunch of other instruments, but she doesn't anymore. I don't know why. But, they played, and they would have these house parties quite often. Anybody who would be dropping by the village knew that they could come to Philip's place, and they could bring their instruments and play some tunes. So it was always a very welcoming place where music would just kind of happen naturally. So we learned basically that way, kind of by osmosis, and just kind of listened to the music for a long time since we were kids. We started step dancing first when we were 5 or 6 years old. My mom was step dancing a lot of the time, and so we kind of picked up from her. And then we kept going with some different teachers in the area. And then we started playing the music later. We had heard it for years and years, but we really just picked up our main instruments more in our early 20s after finishing school.
Well, you mentioned main instruments, but I'm actually looking at the list of who plays what in the trio, and Pastel is piano, accordion, piano, Moog, which is interesting, percussive dance, vocals, and then you've got an even longer list that includes the whistles, the bowron, which is the Celtic drum, Irish drum especially, I guess, piano, jaw harp, which we have already heard prominently, percussive dance, also the Moog synthesizer, for those who don't remember that term. And vocals. Yeah. So, which is your main thing?
I don't know. I play. My thing is more the whistles. That's more of my main instrument now. But I do play a lot. You know, quite a bit of all the other instruments.
Well,
Pazzo, accordion. Pascal plays also a various amount of instruments, fiddle, the mandolin, the guitar. And so it's one of the things that we ask all musicians in the group. We each at least have to play three instruments.
Well, you've got that covered and then some, it seems.
Yeah.
Since you've mentioned actually dancing a couple of times, one of the more fun, which is to say foot stomping aspects of the group is in fact percussive foot stomping, rhythmic foot stomping. This is a tune called La Fugue des Fées. Do you want to say a little bit about what this is about before we give it a listen?
Yeah, this is a three-tune set, but we called it La Fugue des Fées, which is one of the tunes in the set, and I composed this tune a few years ago, and fée means fairy, fugue, kind of like lively or livelihood. So that was the image that came to me when this tune came around. So,
well, it's fun.
Think
one.
Of lively fairies.
They're very lively. Let's give it a listen. It's the trio called Vishten out of Eastern Canada, and they're going to be performing in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6:30. I'm talking with Emmanuel LeBlanc, one of the trio, here on Live and Local. That's called La Fugue des Fées, performed here by the trio Vishten. And I'm talking with one of their number here on Live and Local in advance of their performance tomorrow night in Urbana, as you can hear some pretty fun music. And who's doing the rhythmic, the percussive dance in that one? Is it both you and Pastel?
No, it's just myself in that one. So that's the sitting down with percussion.
The whole business of merging styles is something that, of course, you've made a hallmark of your music making. You mentioned that you wrote that tune. You do traditional tunes. You do Acadian tunes. You include Celtic music, but you also, somewhat untraditionally, include some electric instruments, electric guitar, but also the Moog, which is certainly not one that I've ever heard in reference to traditional music at all. Talk a little bit about how you've decided to create your sound, and maybe especially what's the role of the Moog?
Well, the Moog is a recent addition to our live performance, but also on record. On this last album, we decided to work with Edouard Pachot, who is a producer who comes from the Magdalen Islands. He was a good friend of Pascal's for a long time, and when we chose him, we knew that he had a certain sound in folk music, and we went into the studio and we started working with different bass sounds, and Edouard didn't really want to hear just a regular bass. He wanted to create bass sounds with different instruments that he had in studio, and those included different bass pedals. He had harmoniums and all that, but he also had some really cool kind of vintage bass pedals. And so we recorded the album and then started thinking, how are we going to do this live? And so Elwood suggested that we buy the bass pedal and that we buy a Moog, and that we could recreate the sounds of the album live in the show. So that's what we started doing. So this requires us to add another layer to performing, because we need to play that bass pedal with our feet while we're playing other instruments.
But you've demonstrated that you're pretty adept at the feet, so that should be a piece of cake, right?
It should be, yeah.
Here's a different kind of song than what we've listened to so far, which is to say that it's not quite as upbeat in tempo, a little slower, lovely, lovely song, Je pars pour un voyage. I'm leaving on a trip or a journey, something like that. Who's the lead?
Yes.
Who's the takes the lead vocal role on this one?
Hosted is singing the lead in this piece.
And that is the sister of the woman to whom I am speaking here on Live and Local, Emmanuel LeBlanc, as part of the trio Vishten. Let's give it a listen. This comes from which album?
This is from the most recent album, which is called Mosaic. Mosaic.
And heard on Live and Local here on FM 90.9.
Je pars pour un voyage, c'est pour l'étoile du Nord. Je connais mon équipage, il faut que j'arrive au port. Il faut que j'arrive au port.
That's the Canadian trio Vishten, music called Je pars pour un voyage. Sorry about my slow and sluggish French. Is that one of your compositions?
Very nice.
Oh, thank you. Is that one of your compositions, or is that come from elsewhere?
It's actually a traditional song, and we're very lucky to be able to have access to all of these archives, and a lot of them were recorded in the 50s and the 60s. This particular song comes from the Magdalen Islands, which is where Pascal comes from, and we found it a few years ago. And it's a beautiful song. It basically talks about this man who is going on a trip, and he is just concerned about getting to destination, and his wife is she's worried that he is going to fall in love or get seduced by an Italian woman. So show how they're both living in two separate realities.
Is it fair to say that while your music, meaning the music of Vishten, is not purist, it comes purely from its sources?
I would say so, yes. That's a good way of putting it. Uh-huh.
And it's a great deal of fun, this mix. I've not heard the sound quite like what you guys make anywhere else, which makes it a real treat.
Oh, well, that's great. That's good to hear.
Vishten will be performing tomorrow night, 6:30, at the Independent Media Center in the old post office building downtown Urbana. It's a co-presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival and the Piper's Hut Concert Series. And you can get more information and tickets by going to the Folk and Roots website, which is just folkandroots.org. And you can get more music, more information on Vishten by going to, what's your website?
www.vishtenmusic.com. And again, Vishten is spelled V-I-S-H-T-E-N.
Vishtenmusic.com. And it's Emmanuel LeBlanc of Vishten, along with Pastel, her sister, and Pascal Muse, the other guy. And here they are this is another fun tune, and this, I assume you're featured here in this tune called Tutti Flutti.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have a fun listen, everybody, and thanks very much, Emma, for joining us on the show. Group called Vishten playing Tutti Flutti here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. They'll be at the Independent Media Center downtown Urbana tomorrow night at 6:30. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring the new exhibit, the James Bond theme, Music to Live, Die, and Love Another Day. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. June 30th, the end of WYL's fiscal year, is just 5 days away, and we're still about $30,000 short of our overall fundraising goal. You can support some great locally focused programs such as Live and Local and help us finish strong by calling 217-244-9455 or by going online and giving at willpledge.org. Again, the phone number, 217-244-9455. Or online at willpledge.org. I'm Kevin Kelly. It is Live and Local. And next up, we have a pianist who is going to be playing a recital Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Champaign, featuring the works of Louis Morrow Gottschalk, his name Michael Hammer. And he plays the organ, actually, at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, which is where that recital is going to be. He also plays in at least one rock band that is happens to have as one of its members the sound engineer for this program, Mike Pritchard. And in fact, Michael's on here. I don't know when Mike and Mike's band was on the show, but it's been a while. In any event, Michael Hammer, welcome to Live and Local.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Live and Local. Louis Morrow Gottschalk, kind of an interesting character. I don't know a whole lot about him myself, other than that I know he toured in South America. Was he from New Orleans or around there?
He was born in New Orleans. He moved. He went to Europe when he was just a teenager, and played for the likes of Chopin, Liszt, Berlioz, and really impressed them. And then he went to South America to tour for about a decade, and then he winds up in North America. So he's actually on three continents in his short 40 years, and born in New Orleans. One of the things that he does is he takes the music of his own backyard, Creole folk melodies, various American folk melodies, and synthesizes that with classical piano music, which nobody was doing at the time, particularly not in America. You know, what musical establishment that there was was basically trying to be Europe. So it's really unusual for him to have this unabashed Americanism. And they loved it in Europe. Chopin and company were just blown away by the originalness, the originality of his melodies and his pianism. And then he started a trend, actually, of going over to Europe and sort of getting one's credentials. You know, American artists for the next 100 years were going over to Europe just to, you know, prove that they could play, and then coming back to the United States. Gottschalk was really the first to do that. Then he goes to South America. He plays piano recitals for dignitaries. He's treated like a king. He's paid lots of money to play piano recitals, and he spends some of his time putting on monster concerts, something he learned from Berlioz while he was in Europe. There's no other way to describe them. These are concerts that involve, would he give you a figure, at the end of his life he gave one that involved 650 performers. And that was a disappointment because they were really shooting for 800. You know, they only managed to get 650. Sometimes as many as 40 pianos on stage. And just imagine the work involved just in copying all of that music. And
well, I'm just thinking the work involved in lifting all those pianos, much less fitting them onto what kind of stage.
I don't think he had
be.
Anything to do with that.
No,
he did travel
not.
With his own pianos. I assume he had his own piano movers. He had two 10-foot pianos that he took with him on tour when he was in the United States. After 10 years in South America, he got an offer to tour. And in 1862, He comes to the United States and begins to tour across the northern part of the United States. And remember, he's a Southerner, born in New Orleans, but he believes that slavery is wrong. He believes in the Republican government of the United States. He takes a loyalty oath, and so he spends the entire war touring north of the Mason-Dixon line, from New York to all the way out here, actually. He was in Peoria at one point. He was in Normal. He loved Chicago. He didn't actually get to Champaign-Urbana. I think it's because we didn't exist yet.
Well, that would cover that, yeah.
I think we were incorporated in about 1866 or 67, which is actually a year after he leaves the United States for South America again. So we don't have any, at least there's no diary entry for that. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because while he's traveling, doing all this traveling, he's writing copiously in notebooks that he keeps, and these eventually were published. And I have about 400 pages of quasi-diary entries. He expects that these are probably going to be published someday, so it's not, he doesn't reveal intimate details, but he talks about where he's been on the tour, you know, what hotel has the worst food, when the trains are late, all the kinds of headaches that you would expect of a concert musician back then or even now. And then, of course, you know, every once in a while, it's evident that there's a war on, and he flips a switch and becomes a war correspondent, and you find out that the Confederates are advancing, and he's about to give a concert. And in June of 1863, in fact, he has to worry about that very thing shortly before what becomes the Battle of Gettysburg.
And that is the really the impetus for your giving this recital, or at least picking the particular date, because that was, what, July 1-3?
1-3, yeah.
That the battle took place. Before we hear a little bit more about Gottschalk and maybe about what happened to him in and around Gettysburg, for those who don't know his music, maybe we should hear a sample.
All right. Gottschalk did so much traveling and he gave so many concerts that he started to complain about it, which is fashionable. And he said at one point that if you ask me what time it is, I would tell you it's either time to put on my coat, meaning he has to go on to the next town or he has to play the concert, or it's time to close my trunk, in which case he's moving on. Or it's time to play the banjo, which is a piece that he played all over the United States. So now I'm going to play the banjo.
Thank you.
fun piece.
Yeah.
Is it fun to play?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it nerve-wracking to play?
Well, a little bit of both.
I think, if I remember right, when I first came to WILL to host the classical show, which I did for like 11, 12 years before starting to do Live and Local, I don't think I'd ever heard of Louis Morrow Gottschalk, and mm-hmm. I saw that we had a bunch of recordings of his, and I'm pretty sure that's the first piece of his I ever heard, was the banjo. And I've always thought it had a marvelously infectious rhythmic feel to it, including the part that it begins with, but also some of the later fragments and so on. And was that Camptown Races that I heard sneak in there?
Good ears. Yeah, he does. Toward the end... Yeah, he throws that in the middle of all the hubbub.
The doo-dah and all that
stuff.
Michael Hammer played it here live on our Yamaha Clavinova. You can hear him play it on a rebuilt Steinway, I think, at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. It's on the afternoon at 3 o'clock. It's not going to be an overly long program. I think you told me just as we started out here, it's going to be not exactly a lecture recital, but a recital that also includes your reading from the diary that you were just referring to. I'm looking at the book that's sitting on the keyboard here, Notes of a Pianist by Gottschalk himself.
Right. He did so much writing, and he lived such an interesting life that I think it would be impossible not to include some of his own words. We're also, incidentally, going to be starting off with a pre-concert lecture on the Battle of Gettysburg by a University of Illinois graduate student named Bao Bui. I call it a pre-concert lecture. Actually, if you show up at 3 o'clock, you won't miss it. It's about
the first 10 minutes.
The event starts at 3. He's going to be talking about Gettysburg as it was, the meaning to which contemporaries gave it and how we think of it now. And then after that, the concert will commence. There's also going to be a brief appearance by some singing men. We have a group in the church that is preparing a concert for later this year, and they're going to sing something from the period of the Civil War to give people an idea of what Gottschalk's audiences would have been listening to. So there's a little bit of variety.
So, yeah, it sounds like a cool program. So we led into this last piece, the banjo, with by saying that the Battle of Gettysburg, July 1st through the 3rd, starting the day after your recital, and that Gottschalk found himself right around there. Did he actually get near the battle?
Not too close. Close enough for him. His agent had decided it would be a good idea to tour in the middle of Pennsylvania in June of 1863.
Even though rumors were flying at that point that Lee was bringing his army up there.
Well, they might not have been when he hatched the initial idea. I don't get the impression that you booked a hall 6 months ahead of time. They seemed to be kind of preparing this as they were going. And the agent, I think, would actually travel on to the next town. Maybe also to set up the piano, and then the pianist would sometimes arrive just in time for the concert, or in some cases late for the concert. So I get the sense they're sort of making this up as they go. But by the time he's in Williamsport on the 15th of June, they already know the rebels are coming. There are rumors, but of course rumors are rumors then as they are now. And I think his agent is thinking, first of all, we could make a pile of money, and who wants to say no to that? And secondly, well, maybe the rumors are exaggerated. So he wants to take a chance, and Gottschalk in his diary paints himself as the one who is not quite sure he's up for all this. They give the concert in Williamsport that night, and then he's on to Harrisburg. And while he's on the train, the rebels are supposedly advancing to meet him. And he says at one point, well, if it's my agent's plan for me to play for the Confederate general and his staff, things are going great. But he's a bit worried. And the train stops on a bridge at one point, and you know, that is not a good sign. Where are we? What's going on? And people are getting down in the train in case there's going to be shooting. You know, they're kneeling, laying on the floor. So, you know, and he writes this. He goes on for 11 or 12 pages, and you almost feel like he's become an embedded reporter at this point, because he's just, you know, giving a blow-by-blow description of everything that's going on. So I have to stop and include some of this in the concert. It's going to be a greatly abbreviated version, of course, but just the panic in the streets.
And by include some of this, you mean actually read from
from his, 4 p.m., the rebels are coming. 5 p.m., the governor has issued a call to arms, and everyone is supposed to go fight, and it just goes on from there.
Not including, he hopes, concert pianists.
He hopes, yeah. He does eventually get out of there. I guess there's a happy ending on all that. The notes stop on the 16th. They never do give the concert in Harrisburg. At that point, his agent has realized this is not going to happen. We need to get out of here. And so apparently the next thing that happens is they're up in New England for a couple of weeks. Like I said, they're pretty much making this up as they go along. And apparently concert halls are willing to have them.
Well, he sounds like from your beginning description, having been to Europe, become impressing Chopin and some of the others. He really sounds like a performer and composer somewhat like Chopin. Liszt is more than a little bit of a showman. Mm-hmm. And just watching you play this last piece and your description before we actually started the show, that it's a bit of an athletic exercise to play the music and also for audiences to watch this going on. Physical entertainment is involved in hearing and seeing music by Gottschalk played live.
It is. I think this is probably the a record setter in terms of the number of hand crossings and leaps that I've had to make in any single program. And I played Liszt, I played Rachmaninoff and Chopin. But Gottschalk really does use the piano in some ways the way Liszt did. And, you know, he's sometimes credited for being a forerunner of ragtime or stride, various American styles. And so the left hand is certainly doing a lot of that, a good deal of leaps. But he has to impress his public, too, and I think that's part of the reason. I've given concerts at which, after an hour, someone comes up and the thing they want to talk about is, wow, it was great when you crossed your hands over. Yeah. And, you know, that was really exciting to look at.
That's one of the reasons why people at piano recitals typically sit on one side of the hall so they can see the hands.
They do that, yes. And I was experimenting the other day with moving the piano a little bit so that about maybe three quarters of the hall could see. Originally, when people started giving piano recitals, of course, there are no rules in the beginning. Nobody quite knows what to do. And they did have the keyboard turned to the audience so that the back of the performer was facing the audience. Mm. And I'm trying to remember now who, if it was Dushek or who gets credit for, he's now a minor figure in musical history, but his great contribution was deciding to turn the piano around so you could see the side of the pianist.
Yeah.
You know, whether that was an improvement or not, because, you know, now some people can't see the pianist's
hands,
but you get to see the handsome profile of the pianist in return, so.
Well, before we run out of time, let's hear a little, another sample of your wares and of mm-hmm. Gottschalk's wares.
This is a little piece called Pasquinade.
the pianistic pyrotechnics of composer and pianist Louis Mauro Gottschalk, as recreated, as it were, by Michael Hammer, here in our studio on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Michael will play about 35 minutes or so worth of Gottschalk's music, read from his diary, performer's tour diary, and also a little bit of a pre-lecture on the Battle of Gettysburg in advance of its commencing, as it would have, as it did, 150 years ago this coming Monday. In any event, Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign is the time and location of the recital. And best of luck with it, Michael, and thanks for coming in and letting us know about it.
Thank you.
Our program today is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign for over 25 years. 10,000 Villages has provided income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. I'll just mention a couple of events you can see in here in our listening area tonight. In Charleston, the Central Illinois Stage Company is presenting A Grand Night for Singing, music by Rodgers and Hammerstein. That's at Salisbury Church, 7:30 tonight. Decatur Park Singers are at Kiwanis Park in Decatur this evening at 6:30. It's a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan at 8 o'clock tonight. The Alex Falls self-titled band to play jazz at the Canopy Club in Urbana tonight at 9 o'clock. And it's the Gunny Sack Review, a weekly event at the Yoder Center in Arthur, tonight at 7 o'clock. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.